Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the May 2024 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin by continuing Locking Up Next-Gen ATSC 3.0 Broadcast TV by Fred Baumgartner, K0FMB. Arguably, it would be foolish not to include DRM in a next-gen broadcast system that is IP-based and is practically dependent on the Internet. DRM, encryption, isn't anything in and of itself. Depending on how one uses it, it can be benign, securing some loose ends, or it can enable pay and subscription services. But it could also close the cord cutter loophole, recovering lost MVPD retrans revenue as viewers continue to slowly but steadily return to antenna TV. Television transmitters are expensive to operate. Approximately 20% of viewers, much higher in poorer communities, much lower in dense housing, watch OTA TV. OTA distribution has two major use cases. OTA UHF is the only emergency mass communication delivery system that is reliable enough, has the reach, and with ATSC 3.0 AEA AEI, advanced emergency alerting and informing, can distribute detailed critical warnings and information to all manner of devices, especially smartphones. Secondly, nearly everyone can afford it. For a century, broadcasters served the public interest, convenience, and necessity. Advertisers and supporters paid the bills. Public spectrum was allocated at near zero cost to the broadcaster. A lot can happen as this social contract unwinds. One thing that has always been true is that broadcast regulations can have outsized impacts on civilization. Encryption does profoundly change the conversation and can profoundly change broadcasting. Next-gen broadcast DRM might be Pandora's box or not. How we got here? In the DTV transition, MVPD solved the end of analog TV issue by offering low introductory rates for those willing to disconnect their antennas and not go through the hassle of installing and using converters. Get the coupon, buy the box, install it, scan and rescan. What could go wrong? The MVPD solution was attractive to many. With the Cable Television Consumer Protection and Competition Act of 1992, MVPDs began paying broadcasters retransmission fees. There have been other regulatory actions since, but what we have today was not likely what Congress had in mind. Nonetheless, retrans was seen as a way broadcasting would survive the DTV transition and might be temporary. We've likely seen the on-air battle that takes place when an MVPD pushes back on retrans. Broadcasters loudly proclaim the MVPD is taking away our right to view their free programming. Viewers angrily complain to the MVPD. Cable satellite rates and retrans fees go up. The irony is that the broadcaster needs the MVPD viewers to sell ads, even if they didn't pay retrans. There is even a good argument that broadcasters should pay MVPDs for distributing their signals. Congress undoing retrans is not unimaginable. In 2009, TV stations were selling at big discounts as their future was uncertain. Who needs OTA broadcast if we have cable and internet streaming? Wall Street viewed OTA TV as a precarious investment. The result was rounds of broadcast ownership consolidation. Repeatedly lifting ownership caps was also pitched as necessary to save broadcasting. Ironically, leveraged buyouts or LBO, debt-funded acquisitions, usually performed by a private equity firm, shut down a lot of local programming, and arguably things broadcasters used to do that the public liked that didn't make money. In hindsight, we know that advertising revenues recovered quickly and have mostly grown after that. The viewership didn't go away so much as migrate to MVPDs. Broadcasting's widely popular channels, despite thousands of alternatives, remain well watched. Virtual channels and signing, theft of viewer. Next-gen broadcasters now sign their broadcast. Only an A3SA, ATSC 3.0 Security Authority, certified device can decrypt a next-gen broadcast. An AB pilot offers a rationale for encryption. Ann Chell, managing director of Pearl, notes, "But until now, broadcast TV has been defenseless against theft, malicious hacks, and worse." Next is the example of Croatia, where Ukrainians took over Russian TV broadcasts. This malicious hack appears to have been accomplished by someone with passwords and knowledge to operate the station's playback systems, upload their content, and schedule it for playback, and of course change the passwords, etc., to make it hard to do anything quickly other than sign off. There is no attempt at explaining how A3SA encryption would have prevented this. However, she continues with, "Rather than celebrating such incidents, let's view them as wake-up calls to the urgent need for enhanced broadcast security." While the article never mentions what else DRM is used for, it goes on to say, "This security upgrade for television broadcasters is important since unprotected signals can easily be intercepted, deep-faked, and redistributed without permission." Broadcasting is the single most secure delivery path there is. As any TSM reader knows, overriding a million-watt broadcast transmitter with an antenna 1,000 feet up is no small feat. One might override a neighborhood, but even then, someone might notice the antenna and transmitter. However, the internet is a very vulnerable place. A virtual channel, in ATSC 3.0 speak, is a URL in the electronic program guide. When the viewer selects a virtual channel, OTA content reception ends. The household internet now carries the potentially 4K traffic. Virtual channels look exactly like OTA channels on a connected TV or gateway's program guide. There is a case to be made that encryption protects the viewer of internet-delivered content from malicious content, but usually that's viruses. Encrypting OTA broadcasts to protect the viewer is a harder case to make. It's possible next-gen broadcast proponents often conflate OTA with internet delivery. The $10 Universal Master Key, theft of content. The number one rationale for needing DRM is content theft prevention. There's a judgment, given that the material out there, including the NAB pilot piece above, never or barely mentions DRM. When they do, it is justified by the statement, "Without DRM, broadcasters won't have access to high-value content." That, of course, isn't entirely wrong. On the other hand, we've broadcast what some will argue is high-quality programming for a century without DRM. We all like high-value content. But if movies and theaters were free, few movies would be made. Reselling premium content at a discount might be illegal, but it is also profitable. You will have no trouble finding a supplier if you wish. DRM is widely justified and promoted as a cure for theft of service. If you can find the bootlegger's receiver, you can block that key receiver with DRM, at least until they buy a new one. The problem is that with DRM of any kind, it isn't much of a challenge for a bootlegger to attain an encryption-free, clean video feed to resell. A3SA, ATSC 3.0 Security Authority, argues that the analog outputs they guarantee to continue to support are too low of a quality for a bootlegger to sell. You can decide if you'd subscribe to a bootleg discount service limited to good old composite analog video quality or not. However, the next-gen gateway, dongles, and converters put out HDMI at full quality. The HDMI output is HDCP, High Bandwidth Digital Content Protection encoded. HDCP is often used so that only a display can decrypt the content. A DVR or capture card cannot. Bootleggers use an HDMI HDCP stripper to produce a clean video feed. HDCP strippers are used to feed older monitors and devices that don't have an HDCP decryptor built in, so there are plenty of them out there, and they start at under $10. Check eBay, not Amazon. Not everyone will sell you one, and not every advertised stripper works. And of course, you can always point a good camera at a good monitor with amazingly good results. It is essentially impossible to prevent a bootlegger from stealing content. In the arms race, the bootlegger can only be held off until the encryption is cracked. I've spoken to A3SA staff that equate this to locking your house door. Sure, a bad guy can still break a window and reach in, but it keeps honest people honest. And if one does prosecute, having actively broken the encryption does support the claim that the bootlegger knew that what they were doing was illegal. If you don't encrypt, you probably can't make a good court case that you took adequate steps to prevent theft. Inconveniently, a lock with a $10 key is maybe the best anti-theft tool there is, or ever will be. A3SA. A3SA, which uses Google's Widevine Layer 1 for high-resolution encryption, which is popular in streaming, was created by the major networks and large broadcast groups in consultation with Consumer Technology Association, CTA, to implement these ATSC standards. A3SA is developing the necessary infrastructure and governance to support their adoption, bringing these capabilities to the content creation, broadcast, and consumer electronics industries, and for the protection of our viewers, a3sa.org. At last count, there are 17 broadcast networks or groups and 23 manufacturers that participate as licensees. I was told there is a board, and when I suggested there might be officers, no one disagreed. The only name or contact listed is A3SA's media contact, Dave Arland, of Arland Communications. Mr. Arland has been a promoter of next-gen broadcast and broadcasting in general, and within the next-gen community he is well-respected, and that respect is well-deserved. You can see from the bio at the end of this article that this reporter is an engineer, and engineers focus on implementation. It is the promoter's job to accentuate the positive and shroud the negative. Well-intentioned as promoters might be, by the time we implementers get the product to launch, it often comes wrapped in impossible-to-meet expectations. If not for the hype cycle, there wouldn't be a trough of despair or the path to enlightenment. This is the process. The only contact I have with A3SA is through Mr. Arland. Promoter to engineer translation is jagged. I will note what I see that A3SA presents to the world and what it does not, and ask Mr. Arland to review it. The A3SA site explains that A3SA has rules that prohibit broadcasters from restricting the public from using their DVRs to record content that is simulcast on ATSC 1.0. They support using your DVR or VCR, even if it has analog inputs. Next-gen content broadcast on ATSC 3.0 and not simulcast on legacy ATSC 1.0 is excluded from making such restrictions. While next-gen content, 4K, etc., has yet to be implemented, the door for DRM restrictions is specifically wide open. The other issue A3SA addresses is user information. DRM always brings with it some user data, at the very least, some glimpse of viewing habits. Like any app that runs on a smart device, it can be used to get to any information there is. We've become accustomed to games, social media, shopping apps, etc. That, supposedly with your permission, access everything on your phone, from contacts to pictures and where you go. While there isn't likely to be much on a TV in the way of personal information, it is yet to be seen what broadcaster apps, BA, gateways, and especially 3.0-enabled smartphones, should we see them, does. It's fair to expect we will be accepting an end-user license agreement, EULA, that gives next-gen broadcasters unlimited access to personal information, just like every other internet service. For now, A3SA promises not to misuse your information. A non-connected device can't support much in the way of DRM. It's clumsy. One way is like this. The broadcaster sells a movie. You go to their site or call and pay for it, putting in your device's unique identification number. They then send an authorization to your device via OTA broadcast datacast. Once authorized, you can watch whatever for whatever period of time you have purchased. Realistically, some broadcast programming probably will not be available to unconnected devices. There is no A3SA FAQ that answers anything like what I shared above. There is no product roadmap, no governance description, no 18-page privacy policy, nor anything about how they enforce their rules. One little weird thing. In A3SA world, a device that does not require internet connection is more secure than one that does. The reason is that the unconnected device has a chip that decrypts a signed encrypted feed built in forever and ever. As long as it sees that key, it decrypts. Devices that don't have the right chip, anything built before the chips were available, or chose not to buy them, can use the internet to validate the signed content and decrypt it. A3SA doesn't say how this works, but one would think it temporarily downloads a decryptor each time. As long as A3SA can validate that you are entitled to decrypt, you get the download. It also begs this question. If all devices are looking for the same encryption key, and that key can't be replaced, what keeps a bad actor from reverse engineering the key and using, sharing, or selling it? When everyone has the key, the door lock doesn't do much good. New businesses. Still, it's not hard to imagine an OTA service that can sell theater-quality first-run movies, as long as they can't be turned into bootleg DVDs or restreamed to non-paying viewers. Using broadcast spectrum for non-broadcast use is always controversial. Still, in the past, several pay broadcast TV services have been tried, usually with restrictions on how much pay TV they can do. While putting the main channel behind a paywall might face significant pushback, a DigiNet running some niche program might be welcomed. An OTA skinny bundle, or even an a la carte offering, might be attractive. One should be able to do things like movie night and still retain their main free programming within the confines of the multiplex. There is some precedence for this arrangement. Geofencing. Broadcasters that have rights to content in their designated market areas, DMAs, can expect that said content stays within their DMA. You don't want a neighboring or satellite station imported into your market, replacing your signal. TV stations usually serve only one of the 212 DMAs. One of the reasons TV broadcasters habitually don't stream and don't want to be streamed is that the program could wind up in markets that bypass the rightful content providers. Radio, on the other hand, uses streaming to reach where radio's sub-UHF frequencies won't go. radio doesn't have the same issues with rights clearance outside of the DMA. Over the years, NAB and any number of solution providers have addressed geofencing. Geofencing is something DRM can do, provided the device can be located. There are, and likely will be, more ways to locate a receiver. A3SA doesn't mention this issue. Affordable. A3SA publishes yearly pricing. A major market station that hires assistance with the installation pays less than $3,000. Others pay even less. Only the 3.0 host pays A3SA. In TV, that's a 30-second spot ad, meaning pretty affordable. Manufacturers' fees are not revealed. That fee becomes part of the cost of the device the customer pays. Optics. There is very little in DRM that improves the public's experience, but that doesn't have to be. DRM is for managing and protecting content. Mostly, the public only experiences that the DVR doesn't record, or some displays intentionally or unintentionally don't display. Ideally, DRM is fair and unnoticed. First adopters that lost the use of their next-gen gear know that this is the fun of being a first adopter. Still, the optics aren't great. Here we are, sitting in front of our 4K screens, surrounded by speakers with our first adopter receivers, and poof, we're sitting in the dark, knowing we just wasted time and money on something that doesn't even work. A3SA is a relatively small undertaking. I don't know if it's incorporated or has a mailing address. Outside of signing encryption to the device, not much is happening so far. No one is yet using DRM. No one is talking openly about offering movie night. Ultimately, DRM calls into question the proper use of broadcast spectrum. Using broadcast spectrum for non-broadcast businesses is a place we've only tickled. Next-gen broadcast massively expands the opportunity for non-broadcast services. AT&T, Verizon, etc. spent billions on turning broadcast spectrum into non-broadcast spectrum. It will be interesting to see how this all comes together, or doesn't. Like any technology that profoundly changes the media landscape and opens the door to abuse, the best time to think about guardrails is before you wish they were there. At this point, there is nothing unexpected or unwanted going on, and nothing that TSM readers will find unreasonably limits what we do. The real issues of what if broadcasts will continue to be free and what might slip behind a paywall have yet to be addressed. At this point, there is no energy to take on the issues and not enough adoption to matter. About the author. Fred Baumgartner, K0FMB, earned his first class FCC license and got his first broadcast job before getting a driver's license. He recently retired from Sinclair Broadcasting, where he was director of next-gen broadcast implementation. He had also been a director of engineering with Qualcomm's MediaFlow project, enabling TV on cell phones. His long career included Comcast, AT&T, Harris Broadcast, and several chief engineer roles at TV and radio stations. He was also a key developer of EAS and was TFT's product manager for the first generation of EAS equipment. Fred is well known in Society of Broadcast Engineering circles for his involvement in education. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.